What's so funny, Edwards?
Your boy Captain America over here. The best of the best of the best, sir. You know, with honors. You know, he's just really excited, and he has no clue why we're here. That's very funny to me. Y'all ain't laughing, though.
Okay, let's get going.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Homers at the Bat. Today's date is August 12th, 2016, the year of our Lord. Joburg, what's going on?
Not much, Jeff. You sound like you're having a lot more fun than me. You're watching football. I'm just doing my laundry.
Well, it's technically football. It's men in football jerseys, but
right.
they're all going to be like insurance salesmen and used car salesmen in like 3 weeks. So,
ouch.
Well, I'm not wrong.
No, you're not wrong. That's why I didn't say you're wrong.
I was figuring something out. There's over 2,800 players in NFL camp right now because each team has 90. That's insane. That's too many.
Yeah, it's just throwing guys out there to get injured so your guys don't have to.
It's what it is it sacrifices to the injury god. Right. So each team has to have a certain number of players get hurt every year, and then this is how they do it.
Right.
So, all right, Joburg, we missed last week because I've been working like crazy. We worked missed earlier this week because I've been working like crazy. Got a little shorthanded at work, so I've been putting in like 12-hour days. So that's been a lot of fun.
Good for you. You work hard for the money.
I work long for the money. Nothing I do is hard at work. I just have to do like 10,000 menial tasks. I just have to remember the order in which to do them.
Well, that's what is that? 80% is just showing up and working your ass off?
Pretty much. Oh yeah, work. It's been crazy, but we're not here to talk about work. We're here to talk about baseball and football and maybe the Olympics if we have some time, because those are going on right now.
Right.
So one of the big news items that we missed talking about when it happened was the 49ers have a new face of the franchise.
The old face of the franchise.
And it's the old face of the franchise. Well, he was always like the 1B. This was as high as he got because it was Kaepernick and it was Willis and Gore, and then it was Kaepernick for like 20 minutes.
But I believe last year, it's safe to say that Bowman was the face of the franchise. It was the first year he was the undisputed face of the franchise.
I don't know if it was undisputed. Last year it was. I would say if we had to say face of the franchise, it was.
Don't say Hyde.
No, Anquan.
Oh, Anquan. No. Yeah. Anquan was he's a foreigner?
He beat us in the Super Bowl, so he can't be the face of the franchise.
Well, not only that, but he's a majority of his career spent on a hated rival.
That's true. He was a Cardinal for a long time.
I think that's probably how he'll retire. No, I would say most people considered Navarro Bowman the face of the franchise. Last year. So when you brought this topic up to me, I thought I looked it up. I said, I can't have an opinion without looking up. So then I look it up and it's 7 years, $77 million. And in my head, I know Bowman's 28, 29 years old. I know that means we're paying until he's like 34. Mm-hmm. But, and it looked like $11 million a year was a lot of money. At first, my first reaction was, I'm going to come on this podcast and I'm going to rail against this extension.
Yeah.
Because it just – and I think part of that is just the overall frustration I have with the franchise at this point. But when I actually looked at, like, the guys that are being paid now, guys like Luke Kuechly, Levante David, J.J. Watt, all of whom I consider Navarro Bowman, even with his limitations at this point in his career – to be a part of that class, or at least right under that class. He's getting paid less than Watt, less than Kuechly. He's not getting paid less than David. But David also has a shorter contract. So if you feel like the length of the contract is a strength, then you feel like it's a pretty good deal. The more I got into it, the more I realize it's not a bad deal. What's your take on it?
Well, at first, I mean, the thing with NFL contracts too is it's how much guaranteed money is there, and there's $20 million guaranteed new, which isn't so bad. I think this seems
on par.
Yeah, and it's if he continues to perform as his contract goes on, the $11 million starts to become a steal.
Right.
As the salary cap goes up. And like you're saying, he's paid like a top flight linebacker, but not like a top flight defender and face of the franchise like a J.J. Watt. Well, J.J. Watt's going to get straight paid when his contract's up. It's going to be ridiculous. But
yeah, it's much younger too.
Yeah, much younger as well. And I think that with the $20 million guaranteed, it's going to play out like the Kaepernick contract, hopefully not exactly like the Kaepernick contract, but to the point where if Bowman gets hurt or becomes bad, they could just cut him with relatively little cap expense, because the guaranteed money is the only thing that counts against the cap. And so that'll accelerate the year he gets cut, but it's not like they're going to be on the hook for $11 million for 7 years if they don't want to be.
Yeah, I believe that it's only about 20 million, like you said, maybe a little over 20 million until he's 30. So for the next 3 years.
Yeah. Yes. And then after that, there's no guaranteed.
Right. Which you can pretty fairly expect a linebacker to perform, especially a linebacker with his skill set. Because that was the other thing I went and looked at. I don't consider him like a Lavonte David or a Luke Kuechly, even though I was comparing the contracts. Those are guys that are still fairly good in coverage. And I think last year proved, and most of his career, he hasn't been excellent in coverage. He was adequate and good in coverage, or adequate to good. Last year, I think there's legitimate concerns that he might not be as good as he was. And certainly with age, that skill to protecting coverage goes down. Mm-hmm. But then I looked at guys like Ray Lewis, for example, and Junior Seau, guys that were high tackle players that were about Navarro Bowman's level in coverage, and both of them played until their 40s. So it seems like the guys that don't rely on their speed, which makes sense, right? The guys that don't rely on their speed mm-hmm. for their primary skill can work later than other players that do work on their speed.
I gotcha. And I mean, that makes total sense. We talk about it in baseball with the speedsters. Those are the guys that fall off the cliff the fastest, because
in their early 30s.
Yeah, they just lose this. They lose a step and then another, and then they're Michael Bourne bouncing around the Major League Baseball. But Bowman was definitely a lot weaker in coverage at the beginning of the year. And for most of the year, but towards the end, he started to trust his knee, and it was in actual game conditioning. He got a little bit better because the knee wasn't bugging him as much, but it's still going to be a problem as things go forward, which that's one of the reasons why I hope Hodges.
And we went out and got Gerald Hodges. I was going to say, we brought this up at the beginning of last season or whenever that Hodges trade went down.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, that's why I'm glad they went out and got Hodges, because Will Hoyt's just, he's just a guy. And right. he complimented the rangy coverage Bowman, but I think Hodges has a higher ceiling. And he's built in that same mold as Navarro Bowman, much more athletic than Will Hoyt.
Yeah, it was definitely insurance.
Yeah, exactly. I think I've called him, I don't know if I said it or if it was in writing, he's basically the ideal third inside linebacker, because he's not gonna hurt you, but starting for you, it's just like, okay,
perfect to come in on third downs. You don't play him every down. He was a great pickup when we got him relatively cheap, and he's still only 24 years old, so he's likely to be on this team throughout the remainder of this contract, and if we want him around throughout the remainder of Bowman's career.
Yes. Oh, you're talking about Hodges. I thought you were talking about Will Hoyt. Like, there's just, no way.
No, not Will Hoyt.
Yeah, I was like, there's no way Will Hoyt's 24. That guy's been around. It feels like he's been around for forever, but it's probably only been a couple of years.
Yeah, he's just a guy.
Yeah, he's just a guy. Okay, he's 29. He's older than Bowman. 29, he's over the hill. Get him out of there.
Yeah, he'll be gone. He'll be cut in a year or two.
He'll be fine. He'll be gone. We'll be fine. So, right. All right, so Net result, good signing, good for the Niners. Face of the franchise for a long time, I think. I think that's what they were looking for. They needed some stability.
Yeah.
After all the turnover and all the controversy with Harbaugh to Tom Sula to all the Kaepernick thing.
Well, not to mention they watched so many guys walk. Like, mm-hmm. Willis walked. Borland was supposed to be the future. He walked. They got rid of Bolden in this offseason. They got rid of Alex Smith years ago. I mean, so many guys that were fellow faces of the franchise have left over the course of the last few years that they were really facing a PR disaster with their fan base. So that's an undiscussed bonus of bringing a guy like Bowman back. It keeps people loyal to the franchise.
Exactly. Yeah, you can go out and buy a Navarro Bowman jersey, and it won't be a problem.
Oh, they're going to sell like hotcakes.
Obviously. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The other thing that doesn't get discussed is that there was so much money to be spent. Like, the Niners really had, I don't know the exact number, but just a major amount of money to spend. So we were going to spend it on somebody. Why not spend it on arguably not the most inherently talented, but one of the top three. I mean, not one of the younger guys, but of the older guys, of the guys in their prime, the most talented player on the team.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, that was one of the things that I railed against the 49ers this offseason, was they had so much cap space and used none of it. They had one of the most, you know, one of the highest cap spaces, almost $70 million. And their big free agent signing was Zane Beatles.
Right.
A washed up guard. So using some of that money to reinvest in the players already on the team, that's good. I think it was to placate the fan base and to
totally
try to get some goodwill going. But
I think also
3 years on his contract, you know?
Yeah. When you're at the precipice of sucking as we are, it's really important to not block young players that you've drafted. So I think they are taking the right approach in not going out and signing guys to mega contracts when this year is a lost year. And it's really more about cultivation of talent than it is about winning games.
Yeah, but the thing about cultivating talent is you need actual talent on the roster.
You don't believe Eric Armstead's talented?
Well, I didn't say that. Eric Armstead's talented. I think Buckner's talented. I think there's some talent on the roster, but there's a lot of question marks that I wish they would have gone out. Like the receiving,
one of them starting with a Q.
Well, yeah. I mean, the receiving core would look a lot better if there was a better quarterback on top of it. I think we've talked about that if Torrey Smith was the number two, it'd look a lot better. And, like, everything's just a mess. I just wish there was – I'm not saying that the Niners should have gone out and signed these big free agent deals, but bring somebody
in. Field a competitive team. I definitely understand. It's a fine line to walk. But
yeah.
I certainly think they should make a choice on quarterback. That's gotten to a really weird place where you have your hope is resting in the hands of either Blaine Gabbert or Colin Kaepernick, and you can't choose one of them.
Yeah, buddy, I'm going to go see that garbage show firsthand on Sunday. So that's going to be interesting. Yeah, I'm really excited about tuning out sometime in the third quarter and wandering around Levi's Stadium.
Sure. Bring a lot of beer.
That's the plan, because otherwise I will not be able to handle it.
Nice. All right, Bowman deal was good.
It's good, yes. That's analysis you can't get anywhere else. So, all right, but the bulk of today's episode, we wanted to talk about the trade deadline that went through a while back now. When this was originally scheduled, it would have just happened. But the Giants made some moves. They were one of a handful of teams that made some moves. We're not going to go over every trade, but some of the stuff that we think is important or notable. So first, we'll talk about the Giants trades. They had a handful of trades. One, they moved – I'll do the net. Adalberto Mejia went to the Twins. Matt Duffy, Michael Santos, and Lucius Fox went to the Rays. And Phil Bickford, Andrew Susak went to the Brewers. And the Giants got back reliever Will Smith, lefty Matt Moore, and Eduardo Nunez, who was traded to replace either Matt Duffy or Joe Panik, who they were trying to move, and they ended up moving Duffy. So on the net, on the whole, what do you think of the Giants' moves, Joburg? I know what you think about Matt Moore.
Can I just say, I think it's the most interesting trade season the Giants have ever been involved in. I think they did things this year that were almost incomprehensible before. Brian Sabian and Brian Sabian, because the new guy has only been around for 1 year, Bobby Evans. But Brian Sabian is notorious for trading prospects. He has no problem trading prospects. But one thing he almost never does is trade a major league player. I believe the last time he did it with a player as notoriously loved as Matt Duffy is, which, by the way, I didn't know until we traded him, but everybody loves Matt Duffy, apparently. The last time he did something like that was with the other third baseman. Gosh, why am I blanking on names?
Casey McGeehee?
No, so long ago, the third baseman.
No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, you know.
So you're talking about
Matt Williams.
Matt Williams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. And he was vilified for it. Every fan hated him for doing that, mm-hmm. and yet he did it for Jeff Ken, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah. So it turned
I'm looking up the kid.
So that led to the first championship team we'd had in nearly 10 years, I think. The first time we made it to mm-hmm. the championship, so in about 10 years. Right. So we didn't win, but still turned out to be a net positive trade. And he only did it because we had a hole at second base at the time, and we had depth at third. Mm-hmm. Same situation this year. Whether people want to admit it or not, we have depth at third base. We had a glaring need in the rotation. And even just forget what you think of Matt Moore. If you think he's an adequate starter, this was a net positive trade. Because going into the playoffs, if you don't have three guys you can rely on, you're screwed. If you don't have four guys, you probably can't win. But this...
He can be all four guys, though.
Right, that was proven 2 years ago. But you and I know, if they go in with Bumgarner and Cueto and nothing else, they're a first-round knockout.
Yeah, that's very true. It's maybe not first-round, because they can – it's five games, right? Or did they expand that to seven?
I think it's five games. So what your case is, okay. Bumgarner pitches and Cueto pitch – two of those?
Bumgarner, Cueto, loss, Bumgarner again, which is putting a lot of strain on Bumgarner, but that doesn't bode well for the second round, because then you can't pitch Bumgarner multiple times in that one. So, yeah, it just gives him a better third option than Jeff Samardzija.
And with the shakiness of our bullpen, no guarantee that we would win those games from Bumgarner and Cueto.
That's true, and especially because the bullpen has been so bad that Bochy leaves Cueto in there. So
let's keep doing that.
Because this isn't just our booty, so he's Bochy. He leaves Cueto in there for so long. He leaves him right up until he's bad.
Yeah.
Like they're like, okay, he's doing all right. He's doing all right. Well, he gave up four runs in that inning. I guess it's time to pull him now.
Right. There's virtually no foresight in decision.
Yeah, exactly.
For him this year. We need a whole podcast just to talk about Bruce Bochy, because every time you talk about him, I get a little stirring in me. But
you get a little verklempt.
I get a little verklempt. I think, you know, going back to Matt Moore, so important for that reason that you just said. These two starters, Cueto and Bumgarner, getting used to their complete maximum capacity, and. Mm-hmm. You can have two guys that you exhaust, but you really need a third. Like you can't trust the bullpen to cover for the next three games, and that's where we were.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't have the starter come in, get shelled in three, you know, give up five runs in three innings, and oh well, I guess this is a bullpen game. Because that's how you get bounced in the first or second round.
Because relying on... that's Jeff Samardzija.
Jeff Samardzija is fine. Oh, you know what's funny is I heard... Do you remember your theory as to why Jeff Samardzija has been bad?
Did you hear it?
Yeah, I heard it on a... I don't remember which podcast, but I heard it on a podcast. I think it was CBS Sports.
I'm fist pumping so hard right now. I was going to bring that up, by the way. You saw his last start. Complete shutout. Yeah. Or not a complete game, but... what, six innings, five, seven innings, somewhere in there?
Much better.
Much better. Zero runs. I know that much.
Yeah.
And
so, yeah.
First game back with panic.
Yeah. And when I heard on the podcast, I think it was CBS Sports Fantasy Football or Baseball, because I want to say it was Chris Towers said it. Mm-hmm. I was driving and I was like, Joburg, that's Joburg's idea. I was like, I think Chris Towers listens to our podcast. So
I think he might.
I think he does. So I was very excited about that for you, because I know when my theories get echoed by experts. Quote unquote real person, yeah, quote unquote expert, I feel validated in my opinion. So
definitely,
yeah, that was good. So yeah, I like the Matt Moore trade. I know you do, because you just texted me. I think you texted me like one word, like just, got him or
something. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, I didn't even look. I knew that was Matt Moore.
Right. Well, I'd said about a half an hour before that, I texted you, if we don't get Matt Moore, then this whole trade deadline is for naught.
Yeah, that is what you said, and it's not for naught. We did get Matt Moore, so that's good. But the trade that sort of got me was not the Matt Moore trade. I mean, we've established that was good. That was exactly what the Giants needed, was to get starter either PV or Kane, which they made the wrong decision out of the starting rotation. But going out and getting Will Smith, I thought they paid way too much for Will Smith for exactly the reasons you outlined, which is the reliever market was broken by the Aroldis Chapman trade. But to trade Susak and Bickford, no. One of those players would have been overpaying for Will Smith, I think.
Ooh, now I don't know about that, but I will say that both of them seem like overpaying. But it's hard to even classify it as an overpay if everybody else is paying so much for relievers. Like Chapman demanded a haul. Andrew Miller demanded a haul. It's hard to point to any reliever outside of Melanson, who actually, if you look at that, he was kind of a steal for the Nationals. Like, I don't know who they gave up, but I looked at the names and I didn't recognize them. So I automatically was like, okay, this is a pretty decent deal.
You don't know superstar right-handed pitcher Felipe Rivero?
I don't. but and I'm a baseball guy, and I don't. But I think so the logic I heard behind the Will Smith trade was everybody hated it. And by everybody, I mean every Giants fan hated it. It seems like people outside the organization didn't hate it as much, which makes me think that maybe Phil Bickford was overvalued by Giants fans and overvalued by our organization.
Well, that's entirely possible. But what gets me is now there's nothing left in the prospects pool.
Well, there's a few left. I mean, we didn't get rid of Beedy. We didn't get rid of... Who's the other guy? I don't know. There's about three prospects. Oh, Christian Arroyo. Mm-hmm. There's probably two or three guys left there, which is an extremely thin player pool. But as far as Bickford goes, I liked Bickford. I never really saw him pitch. I liked his stats. But from everything I've heard from scouts, they said that he was a control pitcher. His stuff wasn't that great, and he really depended on location. And if you're talking about a guy at high A that's posting those kinds of stats without great stuff, there could be cause for concern and reason to sell high.
Because it's not the type of thing that'll translate. He's just blown past mediocre talent.
Right. And I think we're going to get a better picture of that in the near future. But it wouldn't be the first time we've traded a guy from single A or double A. Tim Alderson comes to mind. Guys that just never made it at the big league level, who were supposed to be you know, projected to be third starters, solid third or second starters.
Speaking of guys like that, breaking news. Oh, well, I saw it like an hour ago, but I forgot to tell you. Speaking of pitchers that the Giants traded and then went nowhere, Zach Wheeler is going back to Dr. James Andrews.
Oh, no. Wow. What a career he's having, huh?
Yeah, he was – I wanted to look at – I looked it up like a week ago because I wanted to see like that we gave up nothing. And he actually pitched – I forgot he came in and he pitched well for like 30 starts.
Yeah, he had about 180 strikeouts, I think.
Yeah, he pitched well, but that guy's just going to – I think he's going to die. He's going to go the way Jason Schmidt. He's just going to injure his way out of the league after the Giants.
Yeah, or Kerry Wood or Mark Pryor. Ooh. But, yeah – poor Wheeler, man. You just ruined my day. I actually like Zach Wheeler.
All right.
Yeah. So, talking about another pitcher, I mean, I think this will kind of transition well. We talked about the hole at third base after Matt Duffy left. The final trade is Eduardo Nunez was traded to the Twins for Adalberto Mejia, and everybody just kind of scratched their head because we had Matt Duffy coming back. Adalberto Mejia was the most, major league ready pitching prospect we had at that point, and we certainly had a hole in the rotation, and so it just seemed like we were trading for depth and trading away a need, and so everyone was very confused. Of course, it made a lot more sense when we traded Matt Duffy for Matt Moore.
Yeah, and that's I remember when I saw the trade come across. I was at the gym. I got the little notification. I was like, "What in the? Why would they do this?" And then that was the prevailing wisdom that was trickling in was that. It was a
pre-inevitable.
Yeah, it was a pre-move to move either Panic or Duffy.
Right.
Which, I mean, on the net, it's fine. I would rather have Duffy than Nunez, but I understand why they did it. It was
but you'd rather have Panic than Duffy, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Me
exactly.
too.
So it was all, and it was, I would rather have Matt Moore than Jake Peavy is what it comes down to.
100%. 100 times out of 100. I would rather have Matt Moore. Then, well, depending on what Jeff Samardzija becomes, it'll be interesting. So Eduardo Nunez, let's stick to Eduardo Nunez.
Yeah.
I don't think he's terrible defensively. He just hadn't played third before. In recent games, he's come along defensively. He might not be as good as Matt Duffy. Matt Duffy's very good at third base, but he's certainly adequate at third base. And he represented the leadoff guy that Span and Pagan are supposed to be, but aren't really. Mm-hmm. So I think it was trading for a need as far as offense and sacrificing a bit of defense to get there, but not too much defense. He's looked better recently.
Yeah, he's been doing better. I haven't seen a lot of the Giants cause I've been working so much, But from the defense getting better, I have heard that. I haven't seen it directly, but the thing about a guy like Nunez, and Saris put it well, it's guys that can play a lot of positions like Nunez do it because they don't really play one all that well.
Right.
Is what it comes down to. Because if he needed to be at third, he would stick at third. But
correct. Yeah, it's certainly a guy who's 29, who's spent his career being a super utility guy.
Yeah, so he's like, I think he's a rich man's Joaquin Arias, which is fine to play at third. I mean, you could do a lot worse.
So this leads to the next question. Do you believe that Ehire Adrianza has more of a future at third than, say, Eduardo Nunez?
No.
No.
Joe, Ehire Adrianza is not a thing. Stop trying to make him a thing.
I'm going to continue to make him a thing because I – So I'm just going to fit
you
in.
You love Harry Adrianza.
I do. I think part of it is I heard about him and Crawford coming up, and they were ranked by scouts and people in the know as being very similar. Elite defenders without much of a bat. Now, Crawford was always projected to have a little bit more power, and that's certainly played out to be true. But I think we're seeing a little bit of from Ahiri Adrianza. Can I bring up some of his stats for you?
You can, but this is the part where I rewind to one of the earlier episodes where you say that the Giants should trade Brandon Crawford and start Ahiri Adrianza at shortstop. This is something that you've said.
Did I say that on our podcast?
You have said that on the
podcast. Oh boy, that was a hot take, huh?
Yeah. So I'm just hoping that we can preface anything that you say about Harry Adrianza with that.
Okay. Wow. I didn't realize we were podcasting when I was still believing that. Yes. I will go back on that and say that I've grown to appreciate Brandon Crawford infinitely more since his 7-hit game about 2 days ago.
He's, if you include that 7-hit game, he's been incredible.
He's been truly unbelievable. Yes. So let's first talk about, he only has about 18 at-bats, not much of a sample size, but hitting 278, 850 OPS. Let's talk about his AAA and high A numbers, because that's where he has most of his at-bats. Only 73 plate appearances, 68 at-bats, but a 961 OPS, okay? A steal, 6 home runs. He's hitting for power, Jeff, and he's hitting 294.
Oh, I was looking at major league stats. I was sitting here like, Joe, where are you getting these numbers?
I opened it up on Baseball Reference. You just got to go up to that little tab that says minor league stats.
I know. My brain turned off for a second. I was like, Joe, these numbers don't make any sense.
I was making them up. No, yeah. I'm not.
Like, he's hitting 1.5 OPS. He's amazing. No, those are good numbers.
Yeah, he only has 8 strikeouts to 4 walks, too. Not bad.
I mean, that's... But yeah, that's good. It's small sample size, but
right.
I mean,
but so is Eduardo Nunez. If you realize that this is the first year of his career he's ever done anything offensively.
Let me just select which small sample size I want to believe and just leave it be. Okay. I choose to believe in Eduardo Nunez. Only because he replaced Matt Duffy, who I loved. I didn't know you didn't know. That Matt
no clue. That. I was shocked to go on chat room, like in on not chat rooms, but message boards, and see what people were saying. People hated the Matt Moore trade. They still hate Matt Moore, despite the fact he's had 2 quality starts in a row, because he's not Matt Duffy. It's so crazy to me. I didn't realize the passion.
A lot of it is it's half Matt Duffy. It's half his cat. People love Matt Duffy's cat.
Got it.
Have you seen his cat?
I have not, but I don't like cats, so I don't think that would be a selling point.
His cat is amazing. His cat is literally, legitimately like 30 pounds.
Jesus.
Yeah, he's got this massive orange cat.
Oh, my God. So it's Garfield.
It's Garfield, basically, yeah. And then when Matt Duffy got traded, I photoshopped Crying Jordan into his cat's stomach on the Twitter.
I think... I understand the Matt Duffy passion. I think any player that's a part of a championship team, and especially with a fan base that loves its championship players like we do, we love our non-championship players. You know, we're just a very loving fan base and a loyal fan base. But I think if you were to pick any position player on the roster that was a legitimate trade asset, and really there you're only talking about our entire infield plus Hunter Pence.
Pretty much, yeah. Nobody wants anybody else on the
yeah. We're not able to trade Span or Pagan, if we're being honest.
Oh God, I wish we could.
Oh, wouldn't it be amazing? But or any of the end of our, you know, rotation. Of all the players on the team that were tradable on the major league roster, Duffy was probably the most the least important, I would say.
I know what you're saying. If you had to rank players in term level of importance versus players likely to be traded, the point where that meets is going to be Matt Duffy, like the exactly. lowest important and the highest asset, and him being as good as he is, and I think he's cost controlled for a few more years, right. That makes him more useful. So I definitely understand the trade. I can still,
and considering the depth, the shallowness of our farm system, it was almost an inevitability to get the amount of pieces that we need to fill the numerous holes that we had. It was almost inevitable we were going to trade a major league player.
Oh, yeah.
So it just all lined up to Matt Duffy getting traded, and we should have seen it before. I think a lot of us were panicked that Panic would get traded. Again, not trying to make a pun, but it just happens. But Duffy, when I saw him leave – he was the last of these guys to come in. He was the least important cog. It just felt okay to me. But maybe it's because he was the new crush that people like got gaga over him.
I think that's exactly what it was. Was he was the new, like, Brandon Belt became old hat. Like, yeah, he's a giraffe, whatever. That's hilarious. But Matt Duffy and his big old fat cat, he's the new hotness.
Man, nobody ever liked Belt, though, if we're being totally honest.
I liked Belt. I never understood your love of Belt until recently, but I always liked him. I always thought he got a bum rap because they kept like Jimmy jacking him around.
Well, I keep going on these like I'm a big McCubby Chronicles guy. I just got into it in the last couple of years. Everybody is LOL belting. I mean, if he gets hit by a pitch, it's an LOL belt. If he draws out for a walk, it's why didn't you hit it over the wall? It's just he does not catch a break even as maybe the best hitter on the team right now.
Well, yeah. I mean, you remember the short-lived sad Brandon Belt meme?
We never got it off the ground.
I know. Nobody cared. But I saw it. I was looking for something in my Twitter timeline. I posted him and I saw him. And the perfect one, it was like, Brandon, why are you so injury prone? Why do people keep hitting you with baseballs? He got the injury prone label from he just kept getting hit with pitches
in the same thumb like three times.
Yeah, and like he got cracked in the dome with one, and they're like, ah, oh, that Brandon Belt and his concussions.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, I don't know how I got this to Brandon Belt, but look at that.
All roads lead to Brandon Belt, Joe.
I said we'd talk about Brandon Belt, and I meant it. But yeah, so all three of these trades kind of work together. I think we just discussed the Nunez Mejia one pretty well. I'm convinced that's good. I was always convinced about Matt Moore, but let's go into Matt Moore a little bit more. And then we'll finish with Will Smith. Matt Moore is a high walk player. He's also a player that gives up a lot of home runs. Now, one of those things can be neutralized by our ballpark. Mm-hmm. The other thing I think we're hoping Dave Rigetti can rein in. Outside of that, he's a young, cost-controlled starter pitching in his prime. And that's a valuable asset. And cost control aside, all of that aside, statistically, he was the best starting pitcher on the market. So we weren't going to get anybody but Matt Moore, or we could have gotten somebody, but it would have been much more of a disappointment than getting Matt Moore. So why are people mad that we got Matt Moore?
I think because as a casual fan, they look at it and they say, didn't we just spend all this money on two starting pitchers?
Right. Yeah, exactly. No, that's a good point.
And why are we trading Matt Duffy, who people, you know, the heir to Pablo,
right?
Being him, would we just to get another pitcher? Would people forget that that's basically the heart and soul of the team for a long time was their pitching? And people just see it as giving up too much for him when it's Matt Moore and some low level prospects, or Matt Duffy and some low level prospects. I agree with you. I think it's a good trade. I think that he immediately steps in as a number three that the Giants greatly need, but it also sort of begs the question is why is our number four pitcher paid so much? Why is our number five pitcher paid so much? Right. Why is our swing man?
It magnifies the mistakes of the offseason. Because, you know, I hate to be the guy that said I told you so, but when the Samardzija trade happened, the Samardzija signing happened, I did not like it. And I thought it was alleviated by the Cueto signing, but in the back of my mind, I was always like, this is a guy we're not going to get our money for. And now I'm coming around because I've been able to talk myself into saying, okay, he's a guy that needs a good defense behind him. But if I'm truly committing to that, that means that he's not a guy that deserves $18 million. He's not going to be our second starter. He shouldn't be.
Well, no. And I remember when they got Cueto, I said it makes me feel better about the Samardzija deal as well. But Joe, let me throw a statistic at you.
Okay.
The last 82, okay? The last 82 pitches he's thrown, he's not given up a run.
It's impressive.
Right?
That's almost a complete start.
I know. I'm going to make that Jeff Samardzija signing be good if it's the last thing I do.
You know, I'm right there with you. I'm already coming up with the defense excuse. You know, I'm there. Yeah,
that's good. He's only given up more than four runs. One, two, three, four, five. About seven of his last 10 starts. So those other three start.
Right. But that makes Matt Moore so much more important. When we talk about, we talked about insurance, players stepping in and being insurance for other players. Matt Moore is insurance in case Cueto bolts and Samard remains crappy.
Oh, yeah. He's the guy that right now he's the number three starter by talent, and he could easily, I mean, you don't want him to be, but he could easily be the number two.
If everything goes right, his walks go down, he continues to pitch. I mean, I think it's something like 10 starts now. He has a low twos ERA, like a 2.17 or something, over his last 10 starts. That is impressive. Even with all the walks, the walks have come back, but having a low twos, mid twos, even a 3 ERA is an adequate second starter.
Mm-hmm. No, that's, like I said, he's a serviceable second starter. Ideally, you don't have him as one, but right. You hit the nail on the head. He is insurance, because that was one of the things with the Cueto deal was he can bolt after two years.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Giants sort of took on all the risk there that if he was bad, he could just stick around. But if he was really good, he could bolt and go get $30 million somewhere else, you know?
Right. Very player friendly contract. And it really only locks him up for 2 years. So I look at the Matt Moore trade. I see a major hole that was filled. I see a guy that we get for the next, I believe, 4 or 5 years or something. Mm-hmm. In the midst of his prime. We're taking a gamble on a guy who was a highly touted prospect who we believe our park combined with our ability to coach pitching will work away at his inefficiencies.
Yeah, it can be definitely be mitigated at AT&T with Dave Righetti. So I'm looking, it looks like we have him, yeah, through 2019, the Giants have him. So
that's great. Yeah. Another 4 years.
Yep. Real good. So
Will Smith. Will Smith. Now, this is the trade you don't like.
I hate it.
And people hate Will Smith, believe it or not, because he's had two starts where he's given up two runs.
Yeah, and Suicide Squad wasn't very good.
Suicide Squad was terrible. I think that's factoring into it. The new Independence Day movie was not okay. It was not that great. I think Will Smith's being blamed for that too.
Yeah, it's so bad.
But I will propose a counter argument. I watched those two games. He came in for about an inning, a few outs, and gave up two runs in each of those games.
Mm-hmm.
In both of those games, those runs were not his fault. They were because of certain defensive blunders. One of them was Hunter Pence getting pinned up against the wall. I know it's sacrilege to blame Hunter Pence for anything that happens offensively, but he was pinned up against the wall and he missed a ball that was very catchable. Another one was Eduardo Nunez's first or second game at third. It was a play down the line that he should have had. So first that ended up being a single. So I think we're way too tough on Will Smith. He hasn't, I believe, and I got to look this up. He has not given up a walk with the Giants.
That is correct.
So he has 5 strikeouts. I just pulled up 5 strikeouts to 0 walks and only 2.2 innings pitched. So not much, but I think it's the earned runs that are scaring people. And I watched both of those games. They came on they came on flubs in the defense.
They were fluky.
Exactly. Fluky runs.
Okay, but my counter-argument is in Jeff Samardzija's last 82 pitches, he's given up no runs. In Will Smith's last 80 pitches, he's given up 5. Joe, your rebuttal.
Well, he hasn't given up a home run. That's something.
That's right. You don't have one. I'm just being facetious. I mean, obviously you can't take the sample size of what's 6 appearances to be the overall thing. I just, Will Smith, he's sort of a league average reliever. And my thing is they give up a lot to get a guy.
Yeah, I don't believe he's league average. I read something or I heard, I think it was a Keith Law thing. Keith Law, by the way, loved that trade. That's not being discussed, but Keith Law absolutely loved the Will Smith trade and the Matt Moore trade. But he said the Giants actually killed it in general on the trade deadline. But he likes Will Smith, and there was some sort of stat being discussed that, like, he ranked up there with some of the best relievers in some stat. I wish I had more information. I know this sounds so vague. But
there's this one stat, trust me.
It was something out there. Now, okay, so he had a bad – this is really his only – I would say, well, not his only, but his first season wasn't great. His second season was much better. He went from 532 in his first year to 324 in his next year, 370. And then he had his best year in 2015 with 270. And then this year he's kind of struggled. He's at 474. But I don't know, man. Giants fans just don't understand, Jeff.
Like parents?
Just like parents. Exactly.
Take it from me.
Giants fans just don't understand. He's a guy, he strikes out a lot of guys. He doesn't walk that many. And he's coming to a ballpark that mitigates home runs, which he's had a little bit of struggle with over the course of his career. I just believe he's going to get much better. I actually think he's probably the second, or I'll say the third or fourth best reliever in our bullpen right now.
Yeah, but you gave up Buster insurance and a decent pitching prospect for the third or fourth best reliever. And Joe, I am trying to find this statistic and it is failing me. I did find out that Derek Law is fourth in the majors.
That guy's killing it. That's why I said third or fourth.
Yeah, and what is it? Wait, hold on. I think it's XFIP. He's third or fourth in the majors in XFIP. Good for you.
Well, let's put it this way, Jeff. He's only given up, if you take those two games out, which I believe are fluky, he's given up zero runs. So that's something.
Oh, yeah. Those are numbers. Those are some – that's some politician math right there.
Right. Well, we're in political season. No, I think it takes a larger sample size, but if you and I are going to stand on different sides of this fence – then I say we do it today and we see where it goes. I think you, like me, want to see Will Smith succeed because you know that that's the only way we're going to make. We've never had a bad bullpen and won a championship.
That's true. And I thought that we'd be on the same side of this, you know, be just the two of us, but.
Well, I believe right now it's me against Giants Nation, because from everything I've seen, people hate Will Smith. They are ready to crucify the guy.
Oh, I don't hate Will Smith. He seems like a nice guy, you know.
We can do memes now.
He doesn't cuss in his raps.
Right. You know?
His son's a little weird, but, you know, what are you going to do?
You can't control your kids.
Yeah, exactly. You're off making Wild Wild West and Men in Black. You know, you don't have time to raise kids.
No, it's Jada's job.
Mm-hmm.
Oh no. Okay. We got a lot of trades going. I overall, you and I both agree that the Giants did what they had to do.
Oh yeah.
It was risky, but they did what they had to do.
Yeah. For 2016, it was perfect. The only thing that I wish they'd gone out and gotten was some sort of outfielder.
Agreed.
But Carlos Gomez is out there.
Hey, hey, is he about to get cut? I know Puig might get cut.
Gomez got cut. But I could not imagine Puig and Mad Bum in the same locker room.
Yeah, they're definitely polar opposites. But I was thinking when I saw that he was demoted and that there was strife between him and the organization, I thought, is this an opportunity? If there was ever a guy that would want to stick it to the Dodgers, if there was ever a way for Puig to stick to the Dodgers, why would he not want to come here? Like, this seems like the perfect revenge he could get. Although I'm not entirely sure it wouldn't self-destruct the team that we have now.
Yeah, that's true. And that's how I kind of, because Gomez got cut and I was like, that's how I felt about it, was that he's a kind of crazy, but.
Another hothead, yeah.
But he wouldn't tear the locker room wouldn't allow themselves to be torn apart. And he's the perfect, like, even year BS guy, scrap heap guy who just, comes in and for some reason is amazing, like Cody Ross or.
Well, I think it's going to be a Hiroya Duranza this year.
Joe. It's never going to be a Hiroya Duranza.
Oh, no. I hope so.
No, I don't think so. But, all right, there was a lot more of trades than just the Giants trade.
Yeah, where are we going next?
Whole bunch. Zip around the league. You want to go to the Dodgers, who traded for Josh Reddick and Rich Hill, and they traded a whole pile of prospects for him. And Rich Hill still has not pitched for the Dodgers.
And Josh Fields, too. Wow. Los Angeles Dodgers. Why am I not seeing this on the spreadsheet you gave me?
It's on the second column.
Oh, the second column. Where's the second? B? Is that B?
I don't know.
Oh, what sheet three. That's where it's going to be, right?
Oh, yeah. I guess it's sheet three. Oh, yeah. Sheet three is where it's all formatted.
Oh, look at that. Okay, wow. I was looking at the wrong one. Matt Kemp was traded to the Braves.
Yes. Who, Matt Kemp, now they say, well...
Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's the Padres. Jeez.
Yeah. So Matt Kemp, we can talk about that really quick because it's hilarious because he was traded for a whole boatload of stuff before, and now the Padres just don't want him to the point where they traded him for a guy that the Braves were trying to give away in Hector Olivera because the Braves couldn't bring themselves to just cut him.
Right.
Because he has some domestic violence stuff that's pretty substantial and substantiated. So they trade Matt Kemp for that just to cut the guy. And now Matt Kemp's on the Braves, a team that's going nowhere. And now the Braves told Matt Kemp he needs to lose weight.
Oh, wow. What a fall from grace, Matt.
Exactly. Yeah.
Jeez, Louise. If there's any more evidence needed that Rihanna can ruin lives.
It's Matt Kemp.
It's Matt Kemp.
Oh, wow. I was going to say, speaking of ruined lives, there's highlights of the Browns. And RG3, his first play was a bomb to Terrell Pryor.
Hey.
Hey.
Wow, QB to QB.
Right? But then they showed – I was a really bad interception. So RG3, still RG3.
Okay. Well, the Padres
– Back to –
Yeah, that seems like a trade that was meh. The only reason I went to him was because he used to be a Dodger, for people who don't know.
Yes.
But I can't find the Dodgers. So why don't you start talking about them, and I will catch up.
All right. So the Dodgers, the trade broke down as Josh Reddick and Rich Hill, who was on the 15-day DL with blisters on his pitching hand, were traded for prospects Jarrell Cotton, Frankie Montas, and Grant Holmes. I know nothing about prospects, but I know Billy Bean loves prospects, so this trade isn't that surprising for me.
Well, let me tell you, Jeff, that is three of their top pitching prospects after Jose De Leon and Julio Urias.
Okay, so the
next three guys, basically.
Okay, so they did the thing where they moved the now for the future, which the A's are always 2 years away from being 2 years away.
Right.
Because of it. But I didn't understand the trade for the Dodgers because my big thing with the Dodgers has been every year they think that the market inefficiency is the old and busted pitcher. And then they whine and complain, the fans do, about, well, we'd be great if our pitchers weren't always hurt all the time. It's like, you trade for Brandon McCarthy.
You trade for broken pitchers.
Yeah. Stop thinking that's the new market inefficiency, and then your pitchers won't be hurt all the time. And I just think it's wonderful that Rich Hill still has not pitched for the Dodgers.
Wow.
I think he's had three starts skipped because he can't – with blisters.
I think the theory is, Jeff, if you can get 10 of them, that pitch half a season each.
You get a full season worth of starting pitching.
You got a pretty good rotation.
I would say so, yeah. You just need to use most of your roster for it.
Right. You can't have a bullpen, obviously.
Well, then those guys get hurt, so you need like 20 decent relievers. And then I guess they could play the field too when they're not pitching.
Yeah, they're banking on the expansion of rosters in the near future, I think.
Man, they're so forward-thinking.
No, so Rich Hill looks like an obvious mistake, but what about Josh Reddick? I don't know what he's done since he's gotten there, but he's always been pretty good, and he's moving to surprisingly a better hitting ballpark, even though Dodger Stadium isn't that great.
Yeah, going from a Coliseum, it's hard to go to a worse hitting park. So, right. Wow, he has an amazing line. He is 4-for-32 with 125 batting average, 176 OBP, 125 slugging percentage for a hot 301 OPS. So a negative 15 OPS plus, which 100 is league average. So he's been bad.
If we have any Dodger fans, they just passed out. By the way, that is an atrocious start to a trade. I don't know if I've – a guy hitting sub 200 and a pitcher who hasn't pitched yet.
Yes, and he has been negative. He's been half a win below replacement, Josh Reddick has.
Holy cow.
So they could have called up random minor leaguer. Like, who do they have in the minor leagues? Like, I don't know. Yasiel Puig.
Right.
And he would have been better. Any minor leaguer basically would have been better than Josh Reddick over
there. How are we tied with these guys? Hopefully we're one game up now.
I think the Giants are one game up now.
How is it that close? God, they are a disaster.
Well, the Giants have been a disaster for a while as well. So.
That's true. We shouldn't be.
Yeah, so that'll do it. Yeah, that's what's scary is the Dodgers are doing this without Kershaw and without any good play. That's the thing.
Right. Yeah, so again, small sample size. We need to see this play out to its fruition, but I think you did touch on a very important trend, which is that they go after oft-injured pitchers and then scratch their heads at what happened.
Yeah, why is everybody always hurt all the time?
Yeah. Or in this case, going for Josh Reddick, which I thought was really interesting after giving up on Matt Kemp because of an outfield logjam. They went after a position that they have depth at. It was a really strange move. I didn't see it coming. I thought they were going to go after an elite starter. I knew that they were in the market for Chris Sale. I knew that they were in the market for some other top flight starters. And I really thought that they were going to try to pull a deal like that instead of what seems like two unnecessary pieces.
Yeah. Unnecessary is a good word for it.
Yeah.
So the Dodgers suck. Anyways. So the next group of trades that we could talk about is the one that when you texted me trade deadline day, and I'm sure this has changed now with Prince Fielder's retirement, but you said, the Rangers may have the best hitting team of all time.
Not at all. It has not changed because Prince Fielder was terrible. But and we said that 2 years ago. But it hasn't changed.
I said he was done 2 years ago. It only took him 2 years to prove me right.
Well, it took a year because he was really done from the beginning of the season, I think.
That's true.
I think most people admit that. But the Brewers go out and they trade for the best offensive catcher in the league, Jonathan Lucroy. And
Buster Posey.
Right. I would say Jonathan Lucroy, they're at least head and head. They're toe to toe.
Kyle Schwarber.
Well, Kyle Schwarber is dead. But
he is dead.
Jonathan Lucroy and then Carlos Beltran, a guy having a revitalized season, moving from a hitter's park to a hitter's park, so not much drop off there. Former Giants great. I think if you look at their depth chart right now, or you look at their lineup, they might have the best hitting lineup in my lifetime and in my memory. You're talking about I don't know the exact order, but some order of Chu at the top, Desmond next, I think. Lucroy or Beltran, I think, is hitting third now. Then Beltray, then Lucroy, then Andrews, then Mazzara, then Mitch Moreland, who's kind of meh, or Jerks and Profar. They've been playing him a lot at first. So they've got incredible depth and incredible hitters. I mean, can you see a better starting lineup in baseball right now?
In baseball right now? that's kind of putting me on the spot. Not sure.
Maybe Boston?
Yeah, I was thinking Boston. Yeah, I just because they're not only is Boston really good, is they're all really young too, and that's why I think they're gonna trend up. And the Rangers are all old and busted.
Agreed.
Trend down, but right now, this very second, I could put them neck and neck. I would probably put Boston ahead, though.
You think right now, today, they're better than Texas?
Oh yeah.
Interesting.
Well, Jackie Bradley hasn't been as good lately. Hanley's been just okay. Maybe I'm wrong.
Looking
at it now, it's very top heavy with Mookie, David Ortiz, I like Xander Bogaerts, and Jackie Bradley, but then it drops off in a hurry.
Well, you're not entirely wrong. Now, this Texas team has only been around for, 2 weeks now?
Yeah.
But prior to the deadline, you are 100% correct. 609 runs for for Boston leads the major leagues. Next comes Colorado at 603, and Texas is at 7th with 546 runs. So a significantly better offense prior to the deadline.
Yeah.
Now, I think where I got over-exuberant was they started playing Jerks and Profar more.
Yeah, I was going to say, I knew that was why. It was because right. You played Jerks and Profar.
Right, who I still believe in, although he's hit a slump lately. But he's still hitting almost 300, hitting for decent power. You mentioned that they were all old. Chu is old, Beltre is old, Beltran is old. Everybody else is fairly either in their prime or young.
Desmond is old.
Desmond is how old?
31.
Is he 31? My God, he came on late, huh?
Mitch Moreland is 31. Lucroy is 30.
Oh, Moreland, but I'm saying Profar. Let's say Profar's starting. Or Gallo, who they still have.
Okay, but that's the thing. Is Gallo, yeah, Gallo can't even beat out Mitch Moreland.
Right. So, in the few stints he's had the majors, he's hit for an extremely low average and only moderate power. But Beltran... And Beltre, I mean, Gallo can take over for one of them. Profar can take over for the other. I'm seeing a pretty young nucleus of guys. When you talk about Rougned Odor, Nomar Mazara, Jerks and Profar, Lucroy, who's only 29. He's not young, but he's in his prime. Mm-hmm. I think this is going to be a good offense for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, it could be. But I also think Boston is going to be the same way. Also, I'm trying to find a team to prove you wrong about the best offense since you've been alive. I think I may have found it.
Uh-huh.
Are you ready for it?
Yes.
In 2006, the Yankees had Johnny Damon, Derek Jeter, Jason Giambi, A-Rod, Jorge Posada, Robinson Cano, Bernie Williams, Melky Cabrera, and Miguel Cairo. They scored 930 runs.
Very similar team, by the way. A lot of old guys.
Yeah. How about this? This is one you'll agree with. You ready? Uh-huh. You tell me the team. Jimmy Rollins, Shane Victorino.
Yeah, Shane baby. Dudley,
Ryan Howard.
Yeah, baby.
Aaron Rowan, Abraham Nunez, and Chuch Ruiz.
Oh, my God. Our
2007 Philadelphia Phillies. I think they're better than these Rangers.
You know I can't fight that. You just gave me the Trump argument.
I did.
Damn, son. Okay. They're the third best offense of all time.
There you go.
We didn't even mention the Bronx Bombers. How fucking homer are we?
Well, you said in your lifetime. I mean, come on.
Right.
I mean, in your lifetime. Come on. Come on.
Yeah. No, I agree. Still, very good offense. I thought, again, and I thought they won both of those trades, at least in the short term. Still a very interesting move because as much as any other contender outside of the Giants, they needed a starter. They didn't need more offense. They needed somebody to come after Hamels and Darvish, and they don't have that right now.
Yeah, they don't. I mean, and... Yeah, that was something that I thought that they didn't need more offense. They did need some pitching, and you're right. It was very weird that they didn't go out and get it. But at the same time, you did also say Matt Moore was the most realistically available pitcher. I mean, there were Chris Sale rumors and stuff like that. So they may have realized, well, you know what? Maybe this spending on pitching is going to be less efficient
right.
use of our resources. So let's just try to outscore everybody.
Right. I think they might have had the prospects to pull in somebody like Sale, but Sale was always a fringe kind of rumor. It wasn't a guaranteed thing that he was going to get moved by the deadline. And I think the fact that he didn't says a lot, despite the fact that so many prospects were flying around, that it was definitely, there was a possibility for a package for Sale, and it didn't go through. Mm-hmm. That being said, if Matt Moore's the best tradable pitcher out there, bring him to a stadium like Rangers Stadium. And I don't know if that's what it's called. It's probably not. But Rangers Stadium.
Arlington?
Arlington. There you go. Bring him to – that's the city.
Yeah.
But bring him to Arlington, where you're talking about a bandbox stadium, one of the easiest stadiums to hit home runs in. It didn't seem like that was the route to go for the Rangers. So you might be right. They might have just said – let's sit on our hands. Let's not blow the bank on a guy who's probably going to be worse than he was in Tampa.
Yeah. And by the way, Joe, I can't believe you don't know one of the classic, you know, there's Fenway, there's Yankee Stadium, there's Wrigley, there's Globe Life Park in Arlington.
Home of Texas Rangers. On the Pantheon of great stadiums.
Yeah. I can't believe you didn't know that one.
Yeah, I'm ashamed. Yeah. My God. I already forgot it. I'm trying to remember and repeat it back, and I already forgot it.
I only know it because it's still on my screen. Globe Life Park in Arlington.
What is that? My God.
It sounds like you would collect it and shake it, and there's snow that's comes down. Snow Globe Life Ballpark?
That's the MLB equivalent of Power Balance Pavilion.
Don't you purge Power Balance Pavilion.
My God, what do they sell? What could they it has to be snow globes.
Globe Life, it's insurance, I guess.
Whoa.
I don't know. Globe Life, $1 buys up to $100,000 life insurance.
Oh, wow.
That seems like a good investment for, like, you just, like, find a drifter.
Well, you would know. You're the insurance guy.
Yeah, well, you spend $1 on a drifter, become his beneficiary, kill him, get $100,000. That's a huge what we call return on investment.
Wow.
We're
getting into financial planning. This is a rich podcast.
This is great. Well, it will be rich once we find like 10 hobos to kill.
Right.
Right. Anyways.
Speaking
of killing hobos, Joe, you know what city has a lot of hobos?
What?
New York City. They also have Jay Bruce.
They do. They have Jay Bruce.
They do have Jay Bruce, a.k.a. it worked with Cespedes, ?
Well, I think they went out and they got a power bat, which they desperately needed in the middle of that lineup. They just needed offense. And what they gave up wasn't too bad. Dilson Herrera probably didn't have a role on the team long term. And prospects Max Wotell is someone I've never heard of, certainly not a top 100 guy. So they went out and they got offense. And I don't see any problem with it.
I don't see any problem with it either. But my thing is it going to make a difference?
I don't know. It made a difference last year. They got a guy that could hit home runs anywhere. I don't know if that's Jay Bruce because he's played his whole career in Cincinnati. He didn't get the benefit of showing that he could hit in Oakland as Cespedes did. But I think they – decided this is, again, not a rich trade deadline as far as anything outside of the relief market. So the hitters you were going to get, probably one of the best of them was Jay Bruce. And so, yeah, they knew they needed a big hitter. They always need a big hitter. But again, they play in a stadium that's hard to hit home runs out of. So this could backfire. But if it works like Cespedes did, like you brought up, then I think it's a good trade because they still have a good rotation.
Yeah, but my point is I'm looking at the standings. They're 10.5 back.
Yeah.
Of Washington, they're 3 out of the second wild card spot.
Yeah, and Mats and Syndergaard both have bone spurs. So.
Yeah, so that's why I was saying it doesn't make a difference. Are they even getting Jay Bruce beyond the season? Is he a 1-year rental? Did they give up Dilson Herrera for nothing?
That's a good question. Is he a rental? His contract's up?
No, they got 1 year of him. Okay, so that's better.
That's part of it then.
That's part of it because they'll have Harvey back next year, maybe, if he doesn't die.
Right. Do they want Harvey back? But at the very least, they'll have Syndergaard back. They'll have Mats back. I'm sure they're crossing their fingers they'll have Wheeler back. And they'll definitely have DeGrom. So they'll at least have three great young starters. Yeah. And I think that they're just looking to take on a guy likes to pair up with Cespedes that they can. They're trying to build an offense right now. They've been as much of a desert for hitting as any organization in recent memory that I can remember.
Yeah, I mean, that could be true. That could be true. But I don't hate it as much knowing that they're going to have him around for next season as well. My whole thing with the Jay Bruce trade was, what was the point? Because they're just going to get they're going to be out of contention. They're not making the playoffs this year. A team that will make the playoffs this year traded for someone. The Indians.
Hey, hey.
They made a move to shore up that bullpen and got, in my opinion, I think I said one of the, well, the second best one inning reliever in baseball, which is Andrew Miller. I preferred Betances because of his flexibility, but yeah, they traded away. The Yankees traded away the entire back end of their bullpen. All of a sudden, Dellin Betances is maybe the closer. But Andrew Miller was moved for Clint Frazier, Justice Sheffield, Ben Heller, and J.P. Ferreisen.
The other guy.
The other guy. Ferreisen's on another team now anyways.
Not going to pitch here anymore.
Yeah.
No, you just touched on the best trade of the trade deadline, and I mean just talk about what the Yankees did. They had one of the worst or not one of the worst, actually. They had about a middle tier farm system. They were 12th, and they went out and became the second, what I believe is now the second ranked farm system in baseball. I don't remember a leap like that happening in recent memory, but this trade was maybe the biggest reason for that. They pulled in Clint Frazier, Justice Sheffield, both of whom are top 100 prospects. Ben Heller, who was right on the outside of the top 100. And as you said, J.P. Fierstein, who's just another guy. But, Clint Frazier, he's one of the – I want to say one of the two or three best hitters in the minors right now.
Yeah, well, he was promoted. I think he's in the majors.
Really?
They were hyping him up huge, and he got the Yankees cut. You know, the short haircut, no facial hair. I remember seeing that.
Yeah, he had some long hair. He had some long locks before that.
Yeah, he did. But my question is Cashman always had his detractors were always saying, well, you know, he inherited guys. You know, he inherited Jeter.
Right.
Bernie Williams and Mo Rivera and all that. And then the next, when he won, you know, with more than that, when he went out and got Tex and got A-Rod and stuff, it's like, well, anybody can win if you're
trading for guys.
Yeah, if you're signing all the superstars every year.
Right.
But now with this trade, I mean, this probably, if this pays off like the Yankees hope it does, I mean, this really.
This is his team.
Yeah, it vaults Cashman up.
That's a great point, Jeff. I'd never thought of that, but it does seem like he's basically trying to say, look, I'm a GM just like Theo Epstein. I can make my own team and see it to fruition.
Yeah, and he does it like he did it by exploiting a huge market inefficiency, which is the capital C closer,
right?
With Chapman. I mean, Chapman was a rental. They got him for a song because of the domestic violence thing. The Reds didn't want him anymore, and he flipped him for some of the best prospects in baseball. And then he turns around and flips Andrew Miller because he was, you know, capital C closer before, and now he still has
maybe the best reliever left.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, over the next 4 or 5 years, probably, because Chapman will probably start to decline, and he got a whole boatload of prospects for his trouble.
Yeah. I thought that Cashman killed it in this trade deadline more than anyone in recent memory. And we're going to see a team in about 2 or 3 years that looks a lot like the baby Cubs. That looks a lot like, some of the other teams that have gone out, and like the Houston Astros, teams that built incredible cores from the farm system that all graduated together. And I think that's what he's trying to do.
Yeah, that's true. That could definitely be it.
On the other hand, Andrew Miller to the Indians got who most believed to be the best relief pitcher on the market, and they did it to shore up an already fairly solid bullpen. I did hear that there was a bit of a competition between Brian Shaw and Andrew Miller. I think Andrew Miller is going to take over the position in due time, but I think that it's smart not to say, hey, Shaw, you've been our closer. You've been pretty good. And we're going to go out and trade for another guy, and you're not going to be. I think it's more of a player personnel thing or a PR thing to say, you're still our closer. We got two guys now. You're both going to compete. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think the Indians did a good thing. They certainly look more prepared for the postseason than they did prior to this trade.
Oh, absolutely.
Looks good for them.
Does look good for them. So, all right. So I think that puts the trade deadline to bed. There are a few players that we want to talk about, some legends, but we are running a little long. Joburg, do you want to take the legends discussion to the next week? We'll talk about Ichiro. We'll talk about Ortiz. We'll talk about A-Rod. Guys who are making news, making waves at an accelerated age. We've now teased the Ichiro thing twice in two episodes, but I got to fire up my hot take cannon about my why do people hate Pete Rose so much?
They hate him because he gambles, and he's not Japanese. I don't know. I don't know why people hate Barry Bonds so much. I don't know why people hate a lot of these athletes so much. They're just and again, we're getting kind of philosophical here, but. I think that fans are getting a little too passionate about hating guys.
I think so too. I think that's the righteous platform. But we'll take our righteous platform next week and we'll talk about these guys. And maybe we'll talk a little the season. We'll have a game under our belt by then.
Yeah, buddy.
I don't be that enthusiastic.
All right, guys. Well, okay. All right.
Yeah, 49ers. All right, folks, it has been another episode of Homers at the Bat. Thank you for listening. This episode has been sponsored by water. It's everywhere, so go get some.
But not for long.
But not in California.
Adios.
All right, thanks, guys.
I got blisters on my fingers!